Okay, so this week we are learning Parshat Vayeshev. So Vayeshev is when we've moved over from Yaakov being the center of attention and Yaakov being the star of the show to Yaakov becoming more of a secondary character or individual. And I would have said that the one who then becomes the primary individual is really Yosef, but it's not so simple that it's Yosef, which means there's Yosef, but there's some competition for who is going to be the star of the show. And if you look at the Haftorah, you'll see that the Haftorah actually captures this idea in terms of this competition. And there's two trees, right? Is that this week's Haftorah? Yes, no, maybe. Everyone's looking at me like I'm crazy. There's two trees this week. Is it next week? No, this is Ko Amar. Maybe it's next week's Haftorah. Is the two trees. It comes down to the tree of Yehuda and the tree of Yisrael and the eventual merging together. But before we have the merger together of the two sides, we have to, of course, have the division of the two sides. And there's nothing which represents the division more than the Mechirat Yosef, the sale of Yosef. Now, what we're going to do today is we're going to compare two different parts of the parasha. So let me just try to preface this and say the following. We have Perek Lamed Zayin, we have Perek Lamed Chet, and we have Perek Lamed Tet. Perek Lamed Chet, in a certain sense, is the most difficult chapter. Not in terms of the moral issues. The moral issues, Perek Lamed Zayin is the most difficult. That's the one that sets up the whole situation and tells us about the sale. Perek Lamed Chet is where the character of Yehuda is developed, and what we see is not necessarily something which we like. The reason why Lamed Chet is difficult is actually for reasons having to do with Bible criticism. The 38th chapter was one of these sources that they said, oh, it must have been that there were two different sources in front of whoever eventually put this together, because chapter 37 ends with Yosef sold and Yosef going down to Egypt, and chapter 39 begins in the exact same place with Yosef going down to Egypt. And chapter 38, we have Yehuda gets married, and Yehuda has a kid, and Yehuda's kid grows up, and Yehuda's kid gets married, and Yehuda's kid died, and which means many, many years go by. So now, this may sound like a major problem to you, but more likely it doesn't, because Baruch Hashem, all of us have been raised on television and movies. Some of us actually read books. But this is something which is called character development, that you take one character and develop them to a certain point and then stop, and then you go back to the other character and you develop them to a certain point and then stop. And what's the reason that you're going to do this? Because the two characters are going to then come together, which is exactly what the issue. Again, I don't want to ruin the whole book for you. I don't want to ruin the whole story because, you know, there's another couple of parshiyot coming up. But that's really what's going on over here. It is the Yehuda Yosef competition, as it were, which is not going to come to its complete or to its head until we get to Parshat Vayigash. And Vayigash Yehuda, and Yehuda is going to come and he's going to confront Yosef. But we don't know who that Yehuda is until we have a little bit of background over here. Now, let's remember another thing, that, and maybe I'll rephrase this. Chapter 38 needs to be read in two different ways. One, it needs to be read in terms of a comparison to chapter 37, and that we've spoken about in the past. Second, it needs to be compared to chapter 39, which means in 1975, someone wrote an article and commentary, and he noticed, so wow, this is interesting, Robert Alter. He said, wow, look at this. There are themes in chapter 38 which are similar to the themes in chapter 39, and he published this article about it, and essentially saying, you know, enough of source criticism where things come from, let's look things thematically in terms of literature. And he came to this unbelievable discovery, you know, for an academic, say, wow, chapter 38 is actually pretty similar to chapter 37 thematically. Chapter 37 has deception. Deception takes place in terms of, there is a subtopic to the deception. The coat is part of the subcontext. You have the words being used, and they send the code over and they say, do you recognize this code? Hakerna, Ketona, Be in Love. And then you have in chapter 38, you have deception. You have, you end 37 with Yaakov mourning for a son who's died. And then you have Yehuda actually losing two sons, which again is absolutely connected. And it's part of what should disturb us greatly. How in the world is Yehuda not a psychopath? He just lost a son. Shouldn't he have any guilt? Shouldn't he then realize that, you want to call it karma, that that's okay? And then he loses a second son, which means at some point he should be thinking to himself, you know, how has my behavior from the last chapter affected this? Which I'm going to say again, thematically, there's a connection, and then ultimately we have Tamar deceiving him and taking the coat and sending the coat over and saying the exact same words, Hakerna, do you recognize this coat? So Alter said, wow, look at this, these are connected. Later on, he published this in a chapter in a book, The Art of Biblical Narrative, and by that time somebody alerted him, take a look in Midrash Rabbah. They noticed this. Your whole thesis has already been mentioned in Midrash Rabbah. So then he notes, wow, the rabbis were good readers of literature, and they understood themes and so on. So I'm saying that it's a fascinating connection between chapter 37 and 38. But there's also then this connection between 38 and 39. Again, I'll just talk about it a little bit, and then I want to go inside a little bit more. That you have women who are stars of the story in both of them. You have women using their sexuality in both of them. And you have two very different responses to this, which means you have Yehuda succumbing to the prostitute on the side of the road, but of course, right? Or if you want to put it differently, you have Yehuda sleeping with his daughter-in-law, but it's okay because he thinks she's a prostitute, so then everything's okay. And then you have, compared to that, you have Yosef standing up and withstanding. So then you have the temptation of Mrs. Potiphar. Of all the classes I've given on YU, I always know, on YU Torah, these shiurim get posted up, so I always know how many people are going to listen to it, or just based upon the title. If I give it a more exciting title. So I think my most listened to shiur was one on this week's parsha called, And Here's to You, Mrs. Potiphar. Right? People couldn't control themselves. They have to go, okay, so what in the world? But it should be quite clear, because you do have a character over there, you know, who maybe is very similar to Mrs. Robinson, in many ways, by the way. And we're going to come back to that soon. But what's intriguing about this is that you have the contrast. You have the contrast between the failed Yehuda, or the sinful Yehuda, who then has to lift himself up from the world of sin, versus the righteous Yosef, who maybe misbehaved to get to this situation, maybe, but who withstands temptation. So you just can't ignore that, the contrast between the two, because again, in terms of on a thematic level, it's just staring right at you. This interaction with this woman who is going to serve as some kind of either temptation or sin between the two chapters. So again, therefore comparing Mrs. Potiphar together with Tamar. So as I said, the parsha as a whole, when you take the three parshiot, 38 becomes the key, because 38, as much as we or some people questioned 100 years ago, well, 38 is out of order over here, it shouldn't be here at all, they found it from some other document, it's this Yehuda document, and so on and so forth, and therefore the story should just be told going straight from 37 to 39, and you would never notice it if 38 weren't there. Well, 38 is what makes the whole thing much richer in terms of getting then afterwards to chapters 40, 41, 42, and 43, when we actually will then see this eventual meeting up between Yehuda and Yosef, which is really what the story is about. So let's now try again. Let's start from the beginning of Lamed Chet 38. Vayehi be'etahi, and it happened during that time. By the way, the first question that should come up is, which is that time? Are we really going at this point in sequence historically from what happened immediately before? Or vayehi be'etahi means more or less during the same time, which means this is, what did it not say? I know that that's annoying. What did it not say? Vayehi acharei hadvarim ha'ela. And after these things, you notice that? Instead, what does it say? Vayehi be'etahi, at the same time. Which means it's not telling you that this story took place afterwards necessarily, but rather, here's another story which took place when? Around the same time, which means, let me put it this way, as much as people are going to claim, oh, this story is out of order, well, no. Can you read the words? Vayehi be'etahi. This story is taking place over a number of years, but it's over the same time period. This is an overlapping story, not a story which comes after. Just because it's written afterwards doesn't mean, no. Introduction. Vayehi be'etahi. Vayered Yehuda me'etechav, vayet ad Ish Adulami Ushmo Chira. Vayarsham Yehuda Bat Ish Knaani Ushmo Shua. Vayikachev Vayavoileha. Now, is there anything about Pasuk Bet, which is not clear. Yehuda has sort of left his brothers. By the way, a lot of commentaries will say, oh, because of the Mechirat Yosef. And they're going to read it as if it said, and therefore Yosef's Yehuda's whole reputation would have been diminished, and he leaves his brothers and so on. You can look at Rashi and others for that. But as I'll say again, he didn't say that. But what about Pasuk Bet? Is Pasuk Bet really straightforward? What does it say? That he sees a woman. How is this woman described? First of all, the thing which is interesting is there's no name given. You have an Ish Adulami Ushmochira, but when it comes to this woman, no name is given. But what is the description that is given? Bat Ish Knaani. Now, Ushmo Shua. His name is Shua. So what do you know about this woman? That her father's name is Shua, and he is an Ish Knaani. Now, what does what mean? Ish Knaani. Okay, leave the Adulami, that would seem to be the tribe. But what is this Ish Knaani? So again, face value, this is very simple. That Yehuda married a woman who was a Canaanite. Now, I don't know if that disturbs any of you, but Knaan is cursed. Knaan is cursed going all the way back to Bereshit. So Yehuda now leaves his brother. So not only does he leave his brothers, what else has he left? He's left his father. He's left his grandfather. He's left his great-grandfather.
He married out.
Great-grandfather? He married out. He leaves his father and his grandfather. He leaves Avram's values, and he leaves Yitzchak's values, and he marries a local girl. He marries a Canaanite. That's straightforward shot in what we just now read. And therefore, when he has these children, Vatar v'teled ben v'yikret shmo er, Vatar od v'yeled ben v'yikret shmo onan, and then we're going to later find out that these people are not behaving. They sin in the eyes of God. Can anybody give me a very simple reason why Er v'onen sin in the eyes of God? Because they are cursed. Because they are Canaanites. They are descendants of Ham. That Yehuda by intermarrying, by the way, I'm very sorry for all the racist overtones of what I will be saying today, that they married this people that ostensibly Avram was trying to avoid and Yitzchak was trying to avoid and Yaakov was trying to avoid. And now Yehuda, what does it say? Vayarshim Yehuda bat it Kanani. He found a hot Canaanite woman. I'm sorry for adding in my commentary over here. Vayikachev vayavo eleha. Now, part of what we're going to see today is how rabbis like to cover these things up. It's not just art scroll. The conspiracy goes way back before that. Take a look at source number 4, the top of the second page. It's a Gemara in Psachim. It starts off with saying, "Hainu dichtiv lo yekna'ani od bebeit Hashem tzvakot." There's a 1 over there which takes you to the bottom of the page. It's a pasuk in Zechariah. What in the world does Kna'ani mean in this context? Continue the Gemara. There will be nobody poor. Kna'ani. Ein Kan'ani. No one will be poor. Which is a very creative Kna'ani. Ein Kan'ani. No one will be poor. Second line of the Gemara. V'knan menon de'ikari tagar. And how do you know that Kna'ani has anything to do with a business person? Which means the Gemara over here is saying that the word Kna'ani means a businessman. It's a tagar, dichtiv, vayarshem yudah bat ish Kna'ani. My Kna'ani, ilema Kna'ani mamash? Are you going to say that Yehuda really married a Canaanite girl? Because of course there's no Canaanite girls in Kna'an. And therefore, the obvious interpretation should not be the one that we suggest. But on the other hand, it's pasnish. How in the world can Yehuda go and marry a Canaanite girl? You can't say such a thing. Efshar ba Avram v'hizirat Yitzchak, ba Yitzchak v'hizirat Yaakov, v'Yehuda azu v'nisiv. Could it possibly be that a grandson doesn't listen to the values of their grandfather and their father? Because such things never happened in Jewish history. Elo Omer of Shimon ben Lakish, bat Gavra Tagra. He married the daughter of a businessman. That's what a Kna'ani means in this context. Hainu dichtiv Kna'an. Look at source number 3 now, which is their quote, not source, the footnote 3. The pasuk from Hosea. Kna'an biyado mozne mirma la'oshek ohev. And it understands that a Kna'an is a word for a crooked businessman. So Yehuda had a wealthy, crooked father-in-law, which I guess is also a minhag in the family. So going back now, so... And by the way, it completely ruins my story because Erev Onin die because they are Kanaanim. That's where they die. By the way, the Ibn Ezra is not fooled by this at all, because you can't fool the Ibn Ezra. Source 18. I know you're wondering why we're going like out of sequence like this. This is a pedagogical skill in order to keep people awake, that they have to keep turning the pages and so on. Source 17, and then we'll look at 8 or 17. Uvnei Shimon Yimuel v'yamin v'ohad v'yachin v'tzochar v'sha'ul ben ha'kna'anit. Oh, look at that. So Shimon also has a son who's the daughter, who is the son of a Kna'anit. Yud bet. Uvnei Yehuda erva onan v'shela u'peretz v'zarach v'yomet erva onan be'eretz Kna'an. So I think now the focus will be that they died in Eretz Canaan. So this, by the way, is the list of all those who go down to Egypt. That's the context. So 18, the Ibn Ezra writes, Ben HaKna'anit, La'ed, in order to attest, Ki nishay ha-shaftim hayu armiyot, u-mitzriot, vadumiyot, u-midaniyot, v'skirzu levada ba'avur sha'sa Shimon shelo kahogen l'kachet Kna'anit. That Shimon was the only one who married a Kna'anit, which is good, except for one problem, that we know that somebody else married a Kna'anit. Mot erva onan mevor hitam b'nei Kna'anit. And therefore, over here in the same context, it mentions the death of erva onan, because, and by the way, therefore, there was another son of a Kna'anit, who, Shelah, is also the son of a Kna'anit. So I'm going to say it again, that we just now saw a cover-up in the Gemara. The Ibn Ezra never cares about the Gemara's cover-ups, especially in his mind when they go against Pshat. There's a long Ramban over here in source number 19. I'll just say, he goes, how can you possibly say that these people, I mean, let's just read it maybe a little bit over here. Look at the very bottom of the page. The third line from the bottom. V'chein tamar hitabat echat min hagarim ba'aretz. Lo bat ish k'nani b'yichuso. Ki chalila shiya adoneinu David u'mashiach tzidkenu shigale lanu b'meherim mizera k'na'an ha'evin ha'mikulal. How in the world can you say that David HaMelech is going to come from such a lineage? So maybe we'll come back to this, but the Ramban is saying he's supporting the tradition from the Gemara, because how in the world can you say otherwise? By the way, just to note, and David HaMelech's lineage, aside from this, comes from perfect, I mean, this Ramban is a little funny. So now let's go back. They're claiming the Kna'anit is not Kna'anit. The Kna'anit means a businessman, not a David HaMelech, who is going to come from Tamar. If Tamar's son from Yehuda is going to be Peretz. Fine. Okay, fine. I'll come back to Tamar soon. Fine, I'll come back to Tamar. So far, Yehuda marries a Kna'anit. We'll come back to Tamar. Very, very good. Okay. So let's go back to our text. We get then to Pasuk Hey, V'tosafot v'telet ben, has another son, so on. Pasuk Vav in source 1. V'yikach Yehuda isha la'er b'choro, u'shma Tamar. So Yehuda takes a wife for his son, and her name is Tamar. So correct.
Where does she come from?
Exactly, where does she come from? And over here, it's the exact opposite of the description of Yehuda's wife. Yehuda's wife, we're not told her name, but we're told, well, maybe where she came from, but until the cover-up, that she is a Canaanite, whatever that may mean, either from Canaan or something else. We're not told her name. Here we're told her name, but we're not told who exactly she is. Go down towards the bottom of the page. Source number 3 is the Targum Yonatan. Now the Targum, or Miyuchasli Yonatan, the pseudo-Jonathan, the Targum will never miss an opportunity to identify who people are. Again, really the topic today is once again the theory of conservation of people. So look what he does. When it comes to Yehuda's marriage, V'chama taman Yehuda brat gvar tagar. Yehuda sees a woman and she's the daughter of a businessman. She no longer is a Canaanite. If you look at the Targum Yonah, the Targum Regatag Munculus, he does not translate like that. Source 3. Ushme Shua v'gayera. What did it just say? She converted, and then they were together. Which means we have, if you want your cover-up, it's complete now. Not only is she not a Canaanite, she converted. It's because it says it. Where does it say it? I mean, the Pasuk didn't actually say it. Then we go over to Tamar, Unesiv Yehuda ita le'er b'chora, brat shem rabba ushma Tamar. So who is Tamar? She's the daughter of, because it didn't say who she is. So she's the daughter of Shem. Now, the daughter of Shem is interesting because Shem has probably been dead at this point for around way more than 100 years. Hundreds of years, right. So, but who is she? So you have over here an attempt in order to say that who is this Tamar, because we're not told who Tamar is. So the default of who Tamar is, well, when you live in Canaan and you marry somebody local, and unless you're told otherwise, she's from Canaan. And that's what the Ramban was referring to. Don't go and tell me that she was from Canaan. You can't say such a thing. Well, then, I'd like to know who she is. There's just nothing being told over here. On the other hand, you can argue that, well, Yehuda's wife was from Canaan, even though then we say she wasn't, and they were told that she was from Canaan. So basically, we have complete confusion over here in terms of identity. Source number two, Bat Ish Kanaani Tagar, says the Midrash. The Domelo Asher Sachare Sarim Kanaaniyeh Nichbedeh Haaretz Kanan Biyado Mosnei Mirma, and so on. V'yesh Lomar, I'm skip to the end of the next line, Kanaanit Mamash. And some say, very interesting tradition. Oh, it is what it says, that she was actually a Canaanite. Shere Adulami b'toch Kananhu. Because Adulami is, again, that was what you asked before, what's Adulami? No, that's the place within Canaan, so therefore the odds of Canaan. V'yikache derech yishut v'yavoa, v'ilu l'kichat bat shua yakodem michirat Yosef. Again, v'ilu l'kichat bat shua yakodem michirat Yosef, elesidere katuv b'parshat mesuyamet shlo lavsik ben l'kuche v'leidata. By the way, fascinating. Look what the Midrash says. Character development. It didn't want to break up the Yehuda story, so it tells the whole Yehuda story as one story instead of telling us within the actual time frame of when it happened. Shari erva onan noldu kodem mechirat Yosef. This whole story, that Yehuda's descent, the Midrash is telling us, by the way, the time frame. How long is Yehuda around? How long is Yosef sold? When all this happens? And again, you can work out the numbers in various ways, but if you're not going to have Erva Onan incredibly young, then you're going to have to say that the Yehuda story is broken up, and I'm not going to go into all the math now. V'shalach nolad ba'oto sha'a sh'ya osukim b'michirat Yosef v'nichta v'nini misuyam achari me'at Yosef l'diya ki lakach Kavar Ishto Vanav, telling you exactly what I suggested, what Yehuda should have realized is that the burial of his children and of his wife is directly connected to you caused your father to mourn, so the response is over here, therefore you are going to mourn as well. Vishmo Shua Mishem Hatzadik. Oh, look at that. Shua also comes from Shem somehow. How did Shua come from Shem? Who's Shua? He's an Ish Kanaani. So now it's saying, oh no, don't get all caught up in words. V'yesh lo mash l'kach nikor shmo shua, shem gedolei haaretz, zom lashon v'lo nikah shua l'nedal. V'yikachem, bidvarim ligayera, omer ashrech sha'at mitchaber lezera v'mitzvach v'yakov v'nichnest, tachet kanfei shchina, shem alo v'nitgayera v'yavor l'shem ishut. That therefore we have this whole cleansing of Yehuda's relationship, right? Everything now is perfect. Yehuda married a religious woman. She comes from the family of Shem. Her father was Rish Yeshiva. You have over here that a conversion took place. You have over here that everything is good and everything is kosher, which is wonderful considering that none of this has anything to do with the Pshat of what we just now read. Because the Pshat that we read is that Yehuda marries a Canaanite. The Pshat may very well be, although I will admit that there's something mysterious about who is this Tamar, and we're not told about who she is, but the pshat would seem to be that that Yehuda sins, his children sin, that Yosef marries into the Canaanite culture, his children are produced by this Canaanite culture. You have this, so many of the men who misbehave in Bereshit, right? We've seen this before. So many of the men who misbehave in Bereshit are from this Cham family, so much so that the Rav Hirsch, I believe, writes that Cham is because he's hot-blooded. There's this hot-blooded gene which is over there, and therefore you have Paro grabbing him. Avimelech, you have all these men who misbehave, so now you just now can add a couple of more men who misbehave, who you didn't notice before, and those people are Erev Onan, are the ones who misbehave because they got a little bit of Cham in them. And therefore, you go and marry into this family, look what happens. But again, you like the cover-up better, so then everything is kosher and everything is wonderful. And the Psikta in source number 5, it also says, Zeh amaseya kodem mechirat Yosef. Elo sipur katuv, hi laviki lakayu da beishto vanav al shem mechirat Yosef. Again, same thing, that it's telling us here, because Yehuda is punished because of what he had done. What's interesting is, as we continue, it actually tries, in this midrash, it tries to connect the names of Erev Onan. Onan describes Aninut, Yosef was mourning for his lost brother, which is also wonderful projection of how Yosef feels about all of this. The Alshech in source number 6 writes, who is this Tamar? Vizeu Vishma Tamar kitzadeket gmura hayta. Can you remember? I mean, who is this Tamar? She's an absolute tzadeket. V'kein lo hizkir shem avia, didn't bother saying her father's name, which at least according to one tradition is shame. Aliyoto, and now it gives you this other, and again we're going to have our theory of conservation of characters. So, and he says, well, who was her father? Aliyoto Malki Tzedek. Because Malki Tzedek was the one good guy that we saw in Bereshit, who actually lives in the area. So there, by the way, it's also Malki Tzedek's daughter is probably not all that young, but she must be Malki Tzedek's daughter. And therefore, if she's Malki Tzedek's daughter, then there's one question: why doesn't the Torah say that he married the daughter of Malki Tzedek or the daughter of Shem? But the Alshech has an explanation of this. Why? Because she herself is a tzadeket gemura. Because you then would think that the only reason they made the shidduch is because her father is so significant. No. This is to say, because she's so significant, we don't even have to mention the father, and that's why the Torah does it. Okay, lo hiskir raket shma ki al atzma hibit. Ma gam nirmaz tzidkutel b'shem Tamar. And you can even notice, if you're careful, the Alshech writes, what a righteous person she says, because her name is Tamar, as it says, tzadik katamar yifrach. So therefore, we have just now completed our character assessment. Tamar is a tzadeket, and by the way, quite mistreated by Yehuda, but Tamar is a tzadeket. By the way, why would this tzadeket want to marry the children of Canaanites? But she's not really children of Canaanites. They're not really children of Canaanites because their mother was really the children of a businessman, and therefore, as always should happen, that the children of what? A traveling salesman. Okay, anyway. Source number 8, we're skipping 7. Source number 7, Shalal David, is Rabbi Yosef David Zinzheim. I do not know how to pronounce that. He recognizes, he says, hold a second. Rashi notes that Tamar is the daughter of Shem. But on the other hand, there's a Gemara, second line in that source. But on the other hand, the Gemara says, Shamar Tamar Yitoma, Ani Ketana Ani, Vim Haita Bito Shel Shem, Echav Sher Sheta Ketana. Says that she was very young, daughter of Shem. She got very Shem Kfarmit Zezman Rav. He's saying, hold it a second. Are you really going to tell me that she's actually the daughter of Shem? Shem's been dead for hundreds of years. How can she be the daughter of Shem? Uval Karchot Tzarech Lomer Da Agadot Chalukotain. He says there must be, there's different traditions on who she really is. Of course, there are different traditions who she really is. There's Pshad and then there's imagination. I'm sorry. V'yesh Tadaktek. He says, whoever claimed that she's daughter of Shem, it couldn't be, let me read another line, V'lav misvara amar, it couldn't be somebody just made this up, it must be that there's some tradition. Although I would claim quite the opposite. I would claim that there's no tradition and somebody just made this up. Why did they make this up? Because, again, we have our theory of conservation of characters, which Chazal do all the time, and what are my choices over here? My choices are, I have very good characters outside of the family of Avi, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. I mean, they have such a hard time finding wives for themselves, they have to go back to the Lavan, Betuel, and so on family to find wives. Over here, we have no evidence that they're from that line, so then who else could it possibly be? So you have the Pshat answer. What's the Pshat answer? Pshat is that they married local girls. Oh, but that's very disturbing. So who can I, grasping at straws now, who could they possibly have married? So what's the answer? So maybe they married... Maybe the daughter of Malki Tzedek, maybe the daughter of Shem, and so on. But he says over here, well, he goes, that's not logical. So therefore, whoever said it must have a tradition. It could be. But again, I'll say that Tamar, we're told nothing about her identity. That's interesting. Source number 8, the Nitziv, Vishma Tamar, Haitacha Shuva Ma'od, Ad Shehi Kida'it Li Zaker Vishma. She's so important that her name was given. Unlike, well, you have to give something. I mean, I think. But when someone came to Yehuda's wife, we're told that she was from a family of Kanani, whatever that means, but we're not told her name. Over here, we're told her name, but we're not told where she comes from. But he says it must be that she's very significant. And how do we know that she's important? Because the Zera Melucha came from her. Balia Tosfot, source number 9 now. V'yosef hurad. And now we continue our story into chapter 39. Yorad lo ne'amar elo hurad. He was taken. Klomar l'kayem mitzvat ha-makom. That there is the will of God that must take place. L'gagela davaru l'horid avoteinu l'mitzrayim. Yosef was taken down because there's a brit b'ena b'tarim and the Jews need to end up in Egypt. V'lomen ismachar parshat potifar the parshat tamar. And that's exactly what I told you before to note, that there is a contrast between the Eshet Potiphar story and the story of Tamar. V'lama nismachar parshat Potiphar l'parshat Tamar lomar l'cha, to tell you, k'shem she'tamar nitkavna l'tova, just as Tamar was actually a righteous woman, everything she did was l'shem shamayim, kach Eshet Potiphar nitkavna l'tova, she'ra'ata b'itztagniut, she'atid l'tzeit mi'mishpachta, she'yeh mizer Yaakov v'lo heta yodat, So now we've gone in complete circle, that not only by making our comparison do we therefore say that Tamar is righteous and came from a righteous family, now we also have Eshet Potiphar being a righteous woman, and basically what is this saying? That she sees this great soul, she sees Yosef's soul, right? That's the hookup line, right? She comes over and says, our souls need to hook up to create a holy soul in the future, right? This is what she says? No. So you just have to pause a second, because you just as easily could have gone the other way around and say, hold it, maybe these two stories should be compared for, again, I could say because Yehuda sins and Yosef doesn't sin. I mean, that's the easy thing to say. I could say that quite the opposite, that Tamar maybe is a righteous woman, but Yehuda's not, and Yosef's a righteous man, but Eshet Potiphar is not, which means we have these contrasts of themes within the story. It's the same theme, but they're just inverted, and that's what's interesting. Again, you can't ignore the thematic connection between chapters 37 and 38 on the one hand, with the code and with the deception and with the words being used, but you also can't ignore the thematic connection between chapter 38 and chapter 39 in terms of the use of sexuality and temptation and sin or not. And so I'm just saying is that you have some, you have 38 is essential because it really, it's not part of the narrative because it comes from this whole other story, but it's the linkage between these stories, again, on a thematic level. What we'll skip is source number 10 for the moment, unless you don't want to. And you're saying, what do we know? I said, I don't know what you know. So, who is this? When Yosef gets married, this is source number 11, Yosef was taken down, right? He gets into trouble. Eshet Potiphar ends up in prison. He later on will marry a woman by the name of? Asnat Bat Bas Potiphera, Asnat Bat Potiphera. Now, you have to notice that Potiphera and Potiphar are similar, probably not so far from one another in the phone book, but that doesn't necessarily mean, again, pshat, that these are the same people. Nonetheless, you will have some say they are the same people.
A popular name.
Potiphar is described as Kohen. As a Kohen. As Kohen. So, I mean, later on, Yosef will have a special deal for the Kohanim, if you'll notice, which he was helping out his father-in-law's family. I mean, this is not new, these things. So one commentary you said, of course it's the same guy, but after the whole episode with Yosef, and he saw how successful Yosef was and became the most important man, he realized that Yosef was holy and God was there, so he was Chozeh B'Tshuva and became a Kohen. Okay, so it's the same guy, but this is after he was Chozeh B'Tshuva. Source number 12, though, If we're working with our theory of conservation of character, so now we just will feed our theory some steroids and now go completely crazy. So Yosef marries the daughter of Potiphar. Now, we already just now saw that Eshet Potiphar was L'shem Shamayim, and she wants to marry Yosef because she sees the holiness in Yosef, so she wants to be with him. But now the Midrash Agadah, source number 12, is worried a little bit. Hold it. Did Yosef really marry an Egyptian woman? Where does Mitzrayim come from? Mitzrayim comes from Cham. So did Yosef just now marry into the Cham family? How could we say such a thing? Because now we're going to be stuck. Because not only is our problem going to be with that Shol ben Aknanit, our problem is going to be with Yehuda, and our problem is now going to be with Yosef. And by the way, and who did all the other brothers marry? So source number 12 tells us, and I heard you whispering there, Osnat bat Potiphera, and we'll skip to the second line, Vahalo bat Potiphera, Vahalo bat Dina haita? She was Dina's daughter. Say, hold it. Dina's daughter? Which Dina? That Dina. Vishamanu kishaba Yaakov avinu Mishchem, the Midrash writes, Katav al tas shel zahav, he made her some kind of a necklace with the writing in it, and on this writing he wrote, Kol ma she'ira lahem im chomor ben Shechem. Ukishiyolda dina et osnat, who is the daughter, therefore, of Shechem. By the way, we're back to being cursed again. It didn't help us as much as we thought, but by the way, this is a part of the story you never know. You never knew that Dina actually carried the cursed seed of Shechem and gave birth to a child. Now, what happens to that child? What's the child's name? Her child's name is Osnat. So when Osnat was born, Natanatas al Tzavara, he puts this as a necklace on around her neck, Vihishlicha bichomat Mitzrayim. And he, Yaakov, throws her away. Oto ayom yatsa Potiphar l'tayel im ne'ara v'gia ad l'choma. And on that day, Potiphar was going for a stroll. Correct. Shema kol b'chiyat yelud, and he hears a baby crying, exactly like the story of Moshe. Amar el na'arav, he really at hayelad hazeh. And he says, oh, bring me that child. Yes, it's the Moshe story. V'ra'at tas ve'et ha'me'orot, and he saw the whole story. Amar Potiphar lavadav, zot habat bat gedolim hi. This is a daughter, she's a holy woman. Holicha lebiti v'vi la'maneket, go and bring someone to nurse her. Ubavur shagadla nikra bito. And because he raised her, he would call the daughter, his own daughter. Ki ken ketuv b'divrei Yomim, and it gives another example, v'chein Potiphar. That means that this is Potiphar's child. The Chizkuni in source 13 will tell a very similar story, and write, v'yitein latosnat bat Potiphera, hu Potiphar, k'mo shepirish Rashi, davar acher, l'cha k'dei l'farsem shelo shachav et ima. Yosef married her, here is a good intention to marry somebody, in order to publicize that he never slept with her mother. I don't know if you followed that. That, right? So, because, yeah, and it's not like before Matan Torah, somebody ever married sisters, right? So anyway, v'yesh omrim, and some say, al-yidei shagadla b'veito nikra bito k'moshe matzinu b'moshe rabbeinu dichtiv. Noticed by Moshe. So over here, the Chizkuni absolutely connects the story with Moshe. Calm down. Dichtiv ele b'nei bitya bat paro, l'fi shagadla nikra al shma, k'di ita b'midrash bat dina mishchem haita, u'bikshu lahorga b'nei Yaakov. It just got worse. Dina's brothers wanted to kill this cursed child produced by Shechem. Lahargah, bikshu lahargah, b'nei Yaakov avinu. Bo Yaakov avinu v'talah l'kmi'a v'tzavara v'girsha mibito v'hichbia atzma b'in hakotzim v'habarkanim v'al shem hasneh nikra asnat. That again, going right back into this Moshe story, that they find her by a snare, by a bush, and that's why they called her Asnat. Uba Gavriel v'hivia l'mitzrayim, instead of throwing her to Egypt, Gavriel brought her to Egypt. Lefnei eshet Potiphar v'gadlata u'kishaba Yosef v'mitzrayim yetzu kol nashim l'ra'ot machmat yofio. All the women wanted to look at Yosef because he was so good looking. Kidichtiv menot tzada aleshur v'kol achad zareket lo chofetz el tachshit. And Yosef was the first rock star. All the women are throwing their personal whatever works for you, throwing their personal items at him. Vizelo hayala malizrok, and she had nothing to throw at him. Vizerkalo kmiya b'shebit savara, so she threw the necklace at him. V'nistakel bo Yosef shaita bat bito shoyakov v'nasalo leisha. You see how hard we have to work in order to find Yosef a good shidduch? Because how could it possibly be any other way? I understand, but how do you know the Potiphar became Paro? What have we seen today? That Chazal work with the theory of conservation of characters, and sometimes they work very hard and they're very creative. So we end up having, you want to talk about pshat or you want to talk about imagination? Rabbinic imagination. Pshat, pshat. Yehuda married a Canaanite. Pshat. very hard to argue that. Pshat, Tamar is most likely a local woman. Candidates for that would most likely be, again, Canaanites. That's most likely what we have over here. Full stop. Instead, we turn this into Yehuda. No, she wasn't a Canaanite. He was a businessman. And no, Tamar, what are you talking about? Tamar is such a holy person. Tzadika Tamar Yifrach. Tamar ended up marrying. Tamar was somebody who was either the daughter. Now, you have to try to fill in the blank. Maybe from shame, maybe from, but no, somebody who's obviously very, very holy. So now, full stop on that. And then we go down to compare it to the Yosef story. So instead of just saying, hold it, look at the Yosef story, what it says. So then we have to go magically bring down the daughter of Dinah. By the way, on a poetic level, it's also very nice. Yosef was the rejected son. Asnat, therefore, according to this, the daughter of Dinah is the rejected daughter. So you have now a merger between the rejected son and the rejected daughter, who then will one day be, you know, one day they will be recognized for who they are. But of course, I'm going to say that much of this is part of an imagination. But the, of course, Yosef's not rejected. They sold him. They wanted to kill him. Yosef's pretty rejected. Right. So I'm saying, and it's the brothers who want to get rid of this girl as well, according to this rabbinic imagination. So what does this do? It causes the merger between the two rejected ones, which is interesting. But on the other hand, what it does, it provides Yosef with a kosher wife. Right, but why do they live here? And how do you know Malki Tzedek is from shame? No, but why not? So you're going back again to our theory of conservation of characters, where Malki Tzedek becomes connected to shame. Right. And I'll say it again, that we're just taking for granted that Malki Tzedek comes from shame. How do I? Melech Shalem. Oh, must be he's from shame, because Shalem is like shame. That was part of the argument, so therefore he's really from shame. So that means that shame is still up in... okay, so everybody's a Gilgul. Fine. Well, I'll read a source for you in a moment. But first, I want to say something else. Let's go back to the Tamar story. It's back in source number one. What did Tamar actually do? Tamar is given as a wife to Yehuda's son, and Yehuda's son is a sinner. Tamar really is a positive character. And by the way, I have a radical thought for you. Who cares about what somebody's lineage is? Who cares of the rest of this? Maybe we should judge people in terms of their own behavior. Tamar seems to be a very, very elevated individual in terms of her own behavior. Over here, just to go through a little bit, Pasuk Zion, right? She marries Tamar. But ye er b'chor Yehuda rabbeinei Hashem. It's er who's a sinner in God's eyes. V'yimiteyo Hashem. And God kills him. By the way, as much as I would want to say, and we saw the Midrash said, oh, this must have happened because of the behavior of Yehuda, that's not what it says. It says he himself sinned. We're not told what he did. Vayomer Yehuda la'onan bo el eshet achicha v'yabem ota v'akein zer l'achicha. Which, of course, is quite interesting in the laws of Yibam. We'll find out much later. So over here is one of the times that it appears before. By the way, to make you happy, the Ramban over here, when he talks about Yibam, introduces the idea of Gilgul Neshamot. And it says that the whole purpose of Yibam is in order to... Because it says it will be called by the name of the dead brother will live. So how will he live? Because there will be a Gilgul in the child who's brought in will then bring the soul back of the father. So the Ramban, if you want to see a place that Gilgul Neshamot is brought in by the Ramban, it's right over here in this discussion. Continue. It says, but, Pasuk Tet, v'yida onan ki lo yehazara, which is what bothered the Ramban, that this kid would not be his. It's going to be his brother. It's not going to be his. And he does not want to bring his brother back into the world, and therefore, again, using the Ramban, and therefore it says that he behaves inappropriately. And God does not like what he does. By the way, it doesn't stop him having relations with her. It just stops him from having relations that she can get pregnant by. I mean, everybody should have their, you know, values. Vayamit gam oto. And God killed him as well, so therefore we have this idea they both died. By the way, Chazal will say if he died as well, that probably he died for the same reason, and they say that that's exactly what his brother had done also, that Tamar was too beautiful and didn't want to bring children into the world. Vayomun yudilo Tamar kalato, shvi almana beit avich. Go to your father's house. By the way, now her father's house is mentioned. We're just not told who it is. Okay? Go to your father's house. Adidal Shelo. Bini ki amar, but this is what he thinks, Penyamut Gam Huke Achavat, which means he has no intention of giving her. Vatelech Tamar v'teshev beit avia. So it goes now, again, we're told about a father's house, but we're just not told the identity. Which, by the way, is a little strange, because if he was somebody significant at this point, you would suspect, at least, that the identity should be mentioned. V'yirbu yomim v'tamat patshua eshet Yehuda, v'yinachem Yehuda v'yal ugoz ezeit sono, hu v'chira re'ewa dulami timnata. So Yehuda loses his wife. Here is where perhaps one can say more. Now Yehuda's lonely. V'yugad l'tamar le'mor. Tamar was told, hinei chamich ole timnata l'goz sono. Vatasar bigdei almunata, which means she takes off her clothing. By the way, clothing is also a theme which goes on in all three chapters. We have the coat of Yosef. We have the clothing over here. Use more clothing than you imagine. We'll have the clothing in terms of Yosef's clothing being ripped off of him by Eshet Potiphar. So clothing is also a theme which goes through. Vatasar bigdei almunata. And she covered herself with a tzeif. And Yehuda sees her and thinks that she is a prostitute. So there's different interpretations. Either because she covered herself now, which means, and she's sitting by Petach Einayim, which would seem to imply that the only thing that you can see on this woman who's trying to sell her wares are her eyes. Or the other interpretation, Kikista Paneha, that the whole time that he had known her, that she had lived in his house together with her son, he had never seen her face, Kikista Paneha, because she covered her face. So the question is, has she wore a burqa then, or she wears a burqa now? You can decide, but as I said, the commentaries go in two different ways over here. Vayetale et aderech, and so on. And Yehuda has a great pickup line. Vayomer, havo na, avo elayach. Can I have relations with you? Doesn't say, please, he says, can I please have relations with you? By the way, none of you try this. Ki lo yada ki kalatohi. He didn't know it's his daughter-in-law. Vatumamati tenli kitavo elay. What are you going to give me? And here we have these things which are the same as the previous story, the gdi izim, and so on. And she says, yeah, and what am I getting meanwhile? You're going to send me later on, okay? The check is in the mail. No. What are you going to give you now as collateral, as an eravon? And he says, "What do you want?" And she asks the most personal things. Now, and she goes and she switches her clothing back, and she puts on her clothing, and then Yehuda can't find her, and he sends a message towards a thing, and he goes, what, am I going to embarrass myself? I'm going to put an ad up. Will the woman who slept with Yehuda please let me know who you are so I can, you know, pay you your wages? And then in Pasuk of Dalid, after 3 months, so Yehuda then says, okay, take her out and kill her. One of the questions is, why kill her? So he says, I'll kill her because she's a Bas Kohen. Now she's a Bas Kohen because her father is Malki Tzedek, Kohen the El Elyon. So she's a Bas Kohen, so therefore it's Zerefa. If you like that, excellent. Also, big question, what it means, Vati Saref. I gave a shir on Monday, and I said I was going to come back and tell them, but maybe I'll do a Shabbos afternoon. The Baal HaTurim has a very interesting interpretation here. I'm not going to tell you what it is. You'll have to look at it yourselves or not know it. He mutzeit, and as she's being taken out to be killed, v'hi shalcha el chamer lemor, and she sends a message saying, le'isha sher eila lo anochi hara, that the man who impregnated me owns these things. Now, she doesn't embarrass him. She doesn't, by the way, if she lived today, what would she do? Well, first thing, she would, first thing is hire a lawyer. Secondly, put on her Facebook, me too. Right? So you're going to have the lawyer, you're going to go after, you're going to maximize your hand over here, and she plays her hand in the worst possible way, because all that she does, she sends the stuff over, and she says, well, you know, do you recognize who this belongs to, and what should his answer be? No. I've never seen this before. Not at all, you know, and hide the evidence, say the glove doesn't fit, whatever it is that you want, and move on. Which means Chazal get very excited about this. Because Chazal say, from here you learn that it's better to be thrown into a furnace to be burned, to be killed. Better to be thrown into a furnace than to embarrass somebody. By the way, it's a very strange teaching. And the Yusuf, he said, well, how do you know such a thing from Tamar? Because Tamar was willing to die rather than embarrass somebody. So I just want to go back a second. And despite our desire to turn her into somebody who is not a Canaanite, and because it doesn't say it, right? And despite our desire in order to do all of our connections and all our very hard work in making sure that everybody comes from a glatt kosher family, I want to make one observation. And then maybe we'll read a Kabbalistic source if we can. Source 16. Vayechel Noach ish ha'adama v'yita karem v'yesh min ha'yayin v'yish kor v'yitgal b'toch ohala. Noach is suffering from post-traumatic stress. He self-medicates. He ends up drunk. Vayar cham, so cham is our problem. Vayar cham avik na'an et ervat aviv vayaged l'shnei achav b'chutz. What does cham do? Cham sees his father naked, drunk on the floor. And what does cham do? He reveals his father's nakedness. And what do the others do? Vayikach shem vayefet et asimla vayasimu al Shechem shnehem v'yichachronit v'yichaser evat avihem, which means ufnei acharit ufnei acharonit v'ervat avihem lo ra'u. So, what exactly is the difference between shem and yefet on the one hand versus cham on the other hand? That cham is willing to embarrass his father, uncover his nakedness, as it were, and they're willing to cover up his nakedness. And now I go back and I look at Tamar. And let's just say I'm willing to say that Tamar is a Canaanite. And let's say I'm saying that she is from Chan. So you know what else I'm going to say? Lo chpatli. You know why? Because she does the exact opposite of what Chan did. Which means, how difficult is it to say that this is actually a tikkun of the behavior of Chan? Which means, instead of revealing and covering Yehuda's nakedness, no, she covers up. Again, that's exactly what it says about her. She's somebody who covers up. She covers up herself, and she covers up Yehuda, and she covers up Yehuda's sin, and she doesn't let people see the nakedness, which means that something happened over here, and maybe it's a completely different process. I don't have to work so hard and to say that all of these people are coming from holy places, and that leads me to the source that I skipped, and that's the Chida in source number 10. The Pnei David. V'ikra paru shem Yosef tzofnat paneach. And what does he call Yosef? What does tzofnat paneach mean? He who reveals secrets. Third line, it says, "Al tikri shemot." Okay, ulechein kavanat Hashem beetsem ki al yado mitgalim orot hakdusha hanitma'im beklipot ervat haaretz. Remember, Egypt is described as this place, ervat haaretz. What was God's intention over here? Was in order to send Yosef, and who is Yosef? Paro gets it. And he calls him the revealer of secrets, that Yosef is sent here to the most corrupt morally place. And what is that? That's Egypt. For what purpose? L'chein kavanat Hashem be'etzem. God's intention is, ki al yado mitgalim orot ha'kdusha. It almost sounds like Rav Kook wrote this. In order to reveal the lights of holiness, hanitma'im b'klipot ervat ha'aretz, which are hidden within the sins, or it were, or the nakedness of the land, for who yisoda malela lot kol nitzitzot akdusha, and that is exactly what the job is, the role is, to take the lights or the sparks of holiness, va'al yado bo Yisrael sham, for who sibat sheyatzu k'mashik tav bezor lachein shmona elot tzafnat paneach ashahu migale hastumot inami. Another interpretation: she'ata nigla asher ra'ata eshet Potifar she'tivne mimenu v'hu lo yada'a ki hu mibita v'ata niftach ha'satum tzofnat paneich v'tin lo et asnan. Which means what the Chida is playing with over here is, no, these people are unholy, but an unholy people is also holiness. I mean, there's holiness in unholy people. And instead of working so hard and creating this elaborate cover-up in every single direction, what the Chida is saying, no, is that Yosef over here is going to be with a mitzrit, but Yosef is the one who's a tzofnat paneach, and he's the one who knows how to find holiness within the tumah. And therefore, ultimately, and by the way, that's what the Zohar says over here, is in various places, the purpose of Galut is to find the holiness in the Galut. Once we found all the holiness and bring it back over here, so then, meaning ultimately, the purpose of Judaism, for that matter, creation, is to find all the holiness in the world and to elevate all the holiness. And there's various ways of doing it. One way of doing it is living in the land of Israel, creating an elevated society, and have the entire world looking at us and say, wow, we want to be holy as well. It's not easy. And we failed. We failed in the first Beit HaMikdash, we failed in the second Beit HaMikdash. But God's will is that all of the holiness is going to be revealed. So the other way of doing that is go on to plan, I don't know if it's plan at this point, B, C, D, or E. The other plan is now, okay, you have to go there and to find the holiness, and then to bring the holiness back and to elevate the holiness. The first one we're told who's doing this, according to the Chida, is Yosef. Yosef is going specifically into Egypt, Ervat Haaretz, but Yosef is the Tzafnat Paneach, and he's able to see within this, and he elevates this, which means I don't need the entire cover-up. Now, if I'm right what I'm saying about, again, and that's Yosef and Osnat, and if I'm right in what I'm saying about Yehuda and Tamar, there's holiness in Tamar. And Tamar somehow meeting up with this family, somehow this holiness emerges. So the whole problem the Ramban have, and how can Mashiach possibly come from the revealing of the holiness of Ibn Cham? Well, that's the whole purpose of Mashiach. The whole purpose is in order to get this entire world to find the holiness which is hidden within it. And that's what the role of Yehuda ultimately is. So therefore, if I'm saying this, I don't need the cover-up. I don't need my theory of conservation of characters. I can simply say that there's a different dynamic taking place over here, and that is the dynamic of finding the holiness and revealing the holiness and turning even somebody like Tamar into someone who's holy. Because once she did that, and I'll be very specific, once she inverted the role of Cham, once she did the opposite of what Cham did, where he uncovers and tells about his father's nakedness, and she covers up Yehuda's nakedness, at that point she can now enter into the community, she can enter into the Jewish people, and she can end up being the mother of Mashiach here, just like we're going to find Ruth and find Moav and all the other things. It is the revealing of holiness in everything, which is ultimately what the role of Mashiach is. And yet we find that the Ramban over here hesitated and he didn't want to go that far. But as far as what I'm saying is, no, quite the opposite. Tamar comes from Cham. But Tamar fixed everything that Cham did. And therefore, at this point, who is she? Tzadika Tamar Yifrach. At this point, it's completely, completely different and something else has been revealed.